from WNYC in New York. This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. This week marks the 10th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina that led to more than 1,800 deaths and the kind of coverage the TV news lives for. Reporters in raincoats shouting over the gales.
All right, this is where we're going to take refuge and try to shoot some tape. The winds are really kicking.
Anchors condemning government officials who botched relief efforts.
Where the hell is the water for these people? Why can't sandwiches be dropped to those people that are in that Superdome down there? I mean, what is going on? This is Thursday. This storm happened 5 days ago. It's a disgrace, and don't think the world isn't watching.
Media people who spoke our outrage, who spoke our shame.
This is Dante's Inferno, Bill. This is the most horrible thing I've ever seen in a civilized nation. This is 30,000 people with dead babies inside. That's not hype. That's fact.
They didn't always speak fact. While covering Katrina's horrific aftermath, the media often perpetrated myths about what was going on in the streets and the gathering places for the displaced, like the Superdome in New Orleans.
Police say there have been rapes and beatings, and now people are dying. There's no way to know how many.
And in fact, those claims were never corroborated, but they had consequences. According to a government report, the constant claims of unconfirmed violence slowed or sometimes canceled the federal deployment of more relief workers. And all those reports of looting?
Looting was everywhere. In a city with no basic human services, there is little police can do.
One of the things that strikes you is, of course, Walmart is a store that everybody knows. And to walk in it and see it as a free-for-all like that is, you can't help but laugh sometimes, even though it is grossly against the law.
The media's emphasis on residents raiding liquor stores or stealing firearms painted an apocalyptic picture that never matched reality. Looting did take place, but mostly for basic staples like food or diapers. 10 years later, some of those myths have been dispelled, but others persist. Most notably, that Katrina was a killer storm. It wasn't. The killer was the failure of the levees. As Jed Horn observed in the Washington Post, they failed with water levels well below what they were designed to withstand. Another myth? That New Orleans levees are fixed and could withstand another Katrina. Horn writes that the city still lacks a flood defense system remotely strong enough to withstand a direct hit from a Katrina-sized storm. One of the most widely misreported stories of Hurricane Katrina took place in St. Bernard's Parish, a New Orleans suburb, and involved the deaths of 35 elderly residents of St. Rita's Nursing Home. The owners, Sal and Mabel Mangano, decided it was safer not to evacuate their residents, despite warnings from local officials. The morning of August 29, 2005, after Katrina made landfall, it seemed like they'd survived the worst. But then the levees broke. The Manganos managed to save 24 of their residents, but 35 drowned in their beds and wheelchairs. The coverage of the incident was wall to wall, and mostly wrong.
Some say that 34 senior citizens were left to die in their Louisiana nursing home.
And now I'm hearing that these two owners that made money off all of these elderly nursing home citizens were out shopping after all of these elderlies died.
The Manganos were charged with 35 counts of negligent homicide. Their lawyer, James Cobb, recounts the misinformation that swirled around the case in his book, Flood of Lies, The St. Rita's Nursing Home Tragedy. He said he first learned about it like everyone else. On television.
Some stories said that these people left the residence. They tied them to their wheelchairs and beds. I turned to my wife and said, why bother with a trial? They ought to just take these folks out and shoot them.
Mabel calls you. She's 62. Sal is 65. What does she tell you?
She says, we are in desperate trouble. We've been recommended to you by the president of the Nursing Home Association. Will you help us? And without talking to my wife, which got me in trouble later on, I immediately said, I will.
Why?
Lawyers are supposed to represent the unpopular cause. And I firmly believed in that from the time John Adams defended the soldiers in the Boston Massacre. Everybody thought they were guilty too. But you know what? They were acquitted.
Meanwhile, it was reported that the Manganos tried to flee to Mexico on a cruise ship, that they were out shopping, that they were gambling.
Without any factual support in the media whatsoever, Sal and Mabel stayed with their residence. They swam out and saved 24 lives with old people on their backs, lifting them into boats, putting them on top of roofs. And yet they were bludgeoned in the press. It was the government and the media's attempt to put the sins of Katrina on somebody. And they put it on Sal and Mabel.
So on September 12th, 2005, Nancy Grace calls for Lady Justice to bring down the hammer.
That's exactly right.
And the next day you find out that your clients have been charged with 34 counts of negligent homicide. Polling data suggested that almost three-quarters of the potential jurors in the area believe that the Manganos were guilty. So tell me about your strategy.
And this is a great old saying from my colleague Bob Habens. If you're defending a criminal case, find someone else to prosecute and do a better job of prosecuting them than the government does in prosecuting you. So we prosecuted the United States government, the Army Corps of Engineers, the state of Louisiana, its Emergency Operation Command System. We put them on trial. When the House and the Senate of the United States Congress investigated this, Kathleen Blanco, the governor of Louisiana at the time, said the following, and I quote, "We in Louisiana know hurricanes.
And hurricanes know us. We would not be here today if the levees had not failed."
And I asked her on the witness stand, "Did you say that, Governor?" She said, "I did." I said, "Was it true then?" "It was." "Is it true today?" She says, "It is." And I walked over to Sal and Mabel at the council table. I put one hand on one shoulder, one hand on the other, and I asked her, "And they wouldn't be here either if the levees had not failed, would they?" Objection. But the point was made. If you thought she was a bad governor, you should have seen her as a witness. The jury went out maybe at 5 o'clock in the evening. By 8 o'clock, they had a verdict. Generally speaking, in long trials, if a jury comes back quickly, that's not good for the defendant. So my heart sank. And when he said, "We the jury find the defendants not guilty," I almost fell over. Sal and Mabel did fall over, fell into each other's arms. It was no triumph in us winning the case, okay? There was no joy. It was just sadness. The courtroom was packed with 200 or 300 spectators, family members of the victims, friends and supporters of the Manganos. The room sobbed.
After the verdict, how did the media respond?
They disappeared. There was no retrospective of how could we have been so wrong. There were no post-mortems of, gee whiz, how did this happen?
You told ABC News that virtually everyone remembers the event, but when you ask them if they can recall the outcome,
they'll say, "Oh yeah, I remember that, where the old people died, they drowned, yeah. How did that turn out?" But if anybody guesses as to whether they were guilty or not guilty, they guess they were guilty.
Would you attribute that directly to the lack of media coverage?
The blanket wall-to-wall coverage early on in the case, where the presumption of innocence was destroyed and the presumption of guilt was established. Because what we do as human beings when we hear a story, we form a judgment, and then we don't change our mind, do we?
So what are the lessons that you think we should draw?
I can't tell you how many folks who've read my book have said, "I will never again believe the media in the beginnings of a case where they try to cast somebody as responsible." Katrina, because it was such a visual event, the gripping pictures of people on top of rooftops, people at the Superdome, people at the convention center, people drowning, people dying of thirst. The competition among television was so intense, they often ran with something without any second sourcing, any verification, nothing.
You still have to wonder. A health official said, "We have two buses we can give you. You can get those people out of there before the storm hits." Why didn't they evacuate?
that was the $64,000 question. Number one, the health official who testified at trial, I offered them buses and I talked to Mabel. Mabel said he never talked to me. He might have talked to a nurse, but he didn't talk to me.
Wasn't there a mandatory evacuation?
Answer, no. New Orleans, for the first time in the history of my city, had a mandatory evacuation for Katrina. St. Bernard Parish, lower, wetter, surrounded by water, never, ever went mandatory.
But why did they stay?
At the critical moment, they were conflicted. They knew they had 5 or 6 or 7 patients. If they put them on buses for 10, 12-hour trip that usually takes an hour to Baton Rouge, people would die. And Mabel's reluctance was, how do I go down the hall and start unplugging patients? And who do I unplug first, Jim? Your mother? They'd survived tropical storms, tropical depressions, hurricanes, and never got a drop of water in the parking lot. So in that terrible moment of choice, she went with what had worked before. What got the residents at St. Rita was the collapse of the federal levees, which the federal government told us would hold.
How many nursing homes in New Orleans didn't evacuate?
36 out of 57 did not evacuate.
How many suffered casualties?
A good half a dozen or more.
How many nursing home proprietors were charged?
Sal and Mabel. And they're the only ones charged in Katrina with alleged criminal responsibility. They should have charged the Army Corps of Engineers, the commanders, and the other folks who built these levees that just collapsed before they reached design criteria for over 1,800 deaths. But they went as far down the food chain as they could possibly go. And they picked on a blue-collar mom and pop, grandma and grandpa in St. Bernard Parish.
Thank you very much.
Look forward to hearing your show.
James Cobb is author of Flood of Lies, the St. Rita's Nursing Home Tragedy. He's been a practicing trial attorney in Louisiana for 37 years. Coming up, more about people trying to stay out of the limelight and getting a little help from, wait for it, the guardians of the internet.
The article was about her husband being murdered 20 years ago or something like that. She asked for that to be taken down, and they agreed to do that. The link from her name, not from his.
This is On the Media.